Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ann Garner. Welcome to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen broadcast. And my guest is with us, Vicki Arkins. Are you there, Vicki?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. And
good morning.
We are going to play a little intro song to let the people who are listening live have an opportunity to get to the broadcast. I always want to remind people to refresh or press F5. And our dear brother, Pato, and I now am playing a song that I love. We started playing this last week. Life is a miracle.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And God said, let there be light.
Life, oh life,
life is a miracle.
Oh life,
life, oh life,
life is a miracle.
It's a miracle every time a mother gives birth. Tell me who can say how much a child is worth. A miracle living on this planet Earth, rotating to the rhythm of the universe. Life more precious than the rarest stone, more valuable than silver or gold. Life, the essence is invisible to the scientific mind, it's impossible. Like the secret of the seed that grows into a tree, the starry galaxies remain a mystery. Oceans and the seas, the air we breathe, God knows that I believe.
Welcome back. This is Ann Garner with your Wednesday host and with our very special guest, my longtime friend, Vicki Arkins. And we also want to invite you to join our sister broadcast on Saturday. And the co-hosts are Paula Thompson, Kristalyn Beek Larson, and also pinch hitting sometimes is Diane LeBrec. So, Vicki, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And I know that you were hesitant, and I really appreciate that because you said, well, I'm not sure. And it was so delightful.
Yeah, I've never done one of these call-in interviews, and so, it's something different, but I'm glad you asked me because I think I'm going to learn a lot.
Well, it's an amazing experience. It really is a virtual study group. And it works really well for us. And we have some people who are going to be listening that have no access to study groups. And I find that fascinating, that people have no access or choose not to go to a physical study group. And I had someone call yesterday that struggled with what I just said. You know, I'm amazed that we as humans, we still project our expectations on others, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he said, well, I don't understand it. And I just don't. I said, well, there are a lot of people on this planet reading this book that, number one, choose not to be known as readers, and that's more than okay. They're staying inside their particular religious culture or social culture.
Right.
Also, there are people like my husband. We've been married almost 35 years. He carries the book on his trips around the planet. He pretty much, it's very seldom that he has chosen to attend the study group that I facilitated for many, many years. That's his nature. He's an engineer and the scientist, a lot of medical doctors that I know, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you? We're going to talk about your. Okay, we're being told that the volume is lower. Can you increase your volume?
Well, I can certainly try to talk louder. I don't know if I can
increase the volume on
my phone.
So we'll check, and I'll check with some of the others who are also listening. To see if it's okay.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I'll
make an effort to talk louder.
Right, it's important, you know, to project. And so, okay, here we go. I'll ask them. I'm fascinated by your new book, Transcending the Everyday Temptations of Overeating. And that's a huge situation. In fact, on Facebook, which I just love, someone commented in a whole other context. A Muslim friend of mine had posted something about, and in the middle of it, he posted about that we live here 0 to 135 years. And I went back and I said, Mike, that would certainly be nice. And someone from, I believe this gentleman, yeah, the other gentleman, yeah, I'm almost sure he still lives in India. And he talked about the problem that we're seeing with people under 30.
Oh, yeah.
The statistics of what's going on with diabetes and obesity.
Right.
And the couch potato syndrome.
Right. Yeah, and the availability of food. Food is so much more, there's so much more variety of tasty and inexpensive food, and the foods are really engineered to make us keep wanting more. You know, the combinations of the fat and the salt and the sugar really conspire to keep us eating.
Now, isn't that interesting? And I find that ludicrous, and I will tell you something I told my husband. Usually when I walk out the door, number one, we cannot afford to eat out. We rarely, it's a rare thing for us to eat out in a restaurant because of the additives and because of the money. And I respect the, when I do go, is to cafes that I know the owners personally. They know my eating habits, like the Indian restaurant, the Middle Eastern restaurant, the Thai, you know, these are very selective places.
Yeah,
There's even one cafeteria, but they actually shut down here. I have to drive farther. I don't go to a lot of cafeterias. And the other night I was late. I went to my Monday evening service. It was very late when I got out of there, which is usually the case, and I didn't have any food with me. I normally have food with me.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, and I won't mention the name. I went through a drive-through, okay, of which they brag, and I'll use the term brag about how they have healthier foods now.
Uh-huh.
And I got a particular food. And you know what? I took three bites, and it was so horrible, I could not eat it, and I closed the bag. I said, okay, I have a 40-minute drive. So, now there I'd already spent some money.
Right.
Then I stop again and go inside. They got my order wrong, and I said, okay, you got my order wrong. Let's try it again. So this time, and it was a very benign, what they call a vegetarian burger. You know, I said, I'll just get the most benign. And a salad is out of the question when it's iceberg, right?
Oh, right, not much nutrition in there, right.
I couldn't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on there? Your book fascinated me. What inspired you? How did you become so interested in this topic called self-mastery? And we want to give the references to that. And about where that is located in the Urantia book. For those who are listening and are not familiar with the Urantia book, we are readers of the Urantia book, and we do have a topical study group here, and we're talking about self-mastery.
Yeah, so you wanted to know how I got interested in this?
Right, and that there's a section in the book on self-mastery that Jesus talked about.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a one called Lesson on Self-Mastery. That's a section. And then there's also in Jesus' teaching at Tyre, there's a couple of paragraphs that are pretty fascinating about temptation. Those I used quite a bit, too. And, you know, those are probably the two major ones that address what Jesus had to say about, specifically about self-mastery and about temptation. The Orange Book also has some very interesting, in the front part of the book, there's sort of an explanation about why on this planet we have a lot of problems with the conflict between our material and our physical natures. And so I like to use that too when I'm talking to you Rancho Book readers about self-mastery. But you were asking me about what started my interest in this, and it really began, 1987 was the date. It was a year after my last child had been born, and I wanted to lose 10 pounds. And I had been, at that point, I had been dieting on and off for about 10 years. But I knew that I was sabotaging myself with overeating, and at that point, dieting wasn't helping me very much.
Now, that's an interesting word you're using. You were sabotaging yourself.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, we set out to follow a certain diet, and or to eat, just say that we're going to eat healthfully, but at some point in the day, something occurs. Usually it might be something emotional, or it might be just a habitual time of day, like, say, when we get off work. When all
be sure
of a sudden,
and speak up. They're still indicating that they're having trouble.
Oh, okay.
You're so soft-spoken, Vicki.
Okay, I'll really start shouting here.
All right. Just think of being on the farm, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think this is a pretty typical story for a lot of people, that they start losing, they have lost some weight, and then they regain, and then after one successful diet, which I had while I was in college, I had lost 20 pounds in college, and then I began to, you know, the weight came back on, and then By the time 1987 arrived, which is when my interest in self-mastery began, I had been dieting on and off for 10 years, but I knew I was overeating. I would try to follow a diet, but then I would be overeating at a certain point in the day. And so I wasn't finding answers to this dilemma of losing and regaining, and I knew that there must be an answer to this stubborn and all too common problem. I knew I wasn't alone in this. I knew that there were other very disciplined people who are having trouble with this as well. I mean, I'm sure we all know people who are, you know, successful in so many aspects of their life, self-disciplined people, but have trouble in this very basic aspect of life. And I was aware of some of the interesting passages in the Arantia book, which I just talked about, and I got the impression from the Jesus' teaching at Tyre that we should be able to rise above or transcend the temptations of the lower nature. Lower nature, by that I mean the animal nature or the physical, material nature.
Yeah, I love that quote where he says, by the old way you seek, and I'm paraphrasing, you seek to suppress, deny,
Yes.
And by the new way, you're first to be transformed by the Spirit.
Yes, yes.
And then the renewing of your mind. You know, how many times have we observed in ourselves and others, and especially in ministers, that when they become so judgmental and so critical and, you know, just hammering on a situation, that actually they're dealing with that issue themselves. Yeah. That's that reflection of themselves that they don't like, and therefore the only way they learn how to that natural thing, I guess, the animal, is to attack that very thing that they are having problems with themselves, and it makes it stronger. One of my favorite things at the entranceway here, and I believe it's Rumi, I'm almost sure it's Rumi or Kabir. No, you are what you love. You will be what you love, what you give your attention to. That is your master.
Yeah, that's true. Right, right. And that probably, Jesus talks about how all of us have a pet evil that we might need to do away with in
would
order
you talk
to
about
fully
that?
Enter the kingdom of heaven.
Would you talk about what you mean? A lot of there are people who listen to this show because of Facebook that are not readers of the Urantia, but would you please explain what pet evil is?
Well, I'll do my best.
Well, I'll work with you on that.
Yeah, the quote, it really Jesus at that point is talking to the rich young man who did not want to, he wanted to become an apostle, but he did not want to give up his wealth, and Jesus had told him that that would have to be necessary in order for him to become an apostle. That would not necessarily be, that wouldn't be necessary if he was to just remain a disciple, you know, living at home and, you know, but if he wanted to fully devote himself in order to become an apostle, that Jesus told him that he would have to give up his money. So this is the context in which this statement is made. It said, almost every human being has some one thing which is held onto as a pet evil and which the entrance into the kingdom of heaven requires as a part of the price of admission. So so I guess what the way I interpret it is that I see the kingdom of heaven as being much to do with sharing the inner life with God, because we are also told in the Urantia book that the that doing the will of God is nothing more or less than an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God. And so I see the pet evil as being something that we are preoccupied with in our mind. And I think that probably goes back to what you were saying, what we love, what we are preoccupied with, that in our mind, that that can be, I think, what the pet evil is. And that sometimes is a little difficult to pinpoint. You know, that might not be overeating. That could be something else that's going on in your mind all the time, and that's blocking that sharing the inner life. Does
well, you know, I've said this before, and I want to come back to that, the money thing that you talked about, because he didn't mean, you know, they go on to say, the writers there, that if he had been willing to give up that money, it was a test, that he would have been the one that would have been in charge of the money.
Yeah.
You know, it's the love of money. And I heard a preacher from a pulpit say that the other day, that it's not wealth. You know, you and I know personally some very, very, very wealthy individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, beyond our imagination.
Sure.
What have they done with their wealth?
Right.
There's someone who has a case of your books and said to tell you hello. And I don't. I want to be careful who I say, because the problem with some people, if they find out somebody's extremely wealthy, I've often told people, when my ship comes in with, you know, with great money, and there have been times that I've been involved in great wealth, I don't tell people, because you're not sure why they're being your friend.
Oh, right, right.
And what have they done with their lives?
Right, right.
And the one who's sending you that message that has a case of the book, your book,
mm-hmm.
in the clinic, he and his wife both have gone back to school continuously. And he was born with, he came up with a lot of money.
Right.
Now, a lot of people who are born with a silver or now I say a gold spoon in their mouth, they have no idea what it feels like where the rubber meets the road. And therefore, they lose all sense of reality. Therefore, they're in the power control mode.
Right.
And I don't begrudge money, but I admire him and the others that I know personally. They keep themselves, they keep going back for more education. They keep exposing themselves to a myriad of people in one-on-one and small groups instead of just standing up in their castles.
Mm-hmm.
And they become very, what is that, they give away a lot of money.
Right, right.
They figured it out.
Right. They're not preoccupied with it.
They're not preoccupied with it. That's a good way to put it. And there's, if you put the kingdom first, all these things will be added unto you. And we're in rough times. We're in rough seas right now with the financial situation of the planet.
Yes, very precarious.
And those of us, like what I was reading in your book, I want to get back. Do you know how much money I wasted trying to eat food the other night? And I said, okay, this is silly, because I always carry, I keep an ice chest in this hot, well, I always have a bag that to carry out cold stuff in reusable bags. But in the heat, 100-degree heat in Texas, I carry an ice chest, and I even have one that plugs into the car. Because I'm always on the move with meetings and gatherings, and I always have fruit, dried fruit, very simple things. And going back to the land, and I said this to a friend of mine who I just met on Facebook, wonderful, 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 talented, gifted young man, that in these troubled times, only those are going to survive mentally, emotionally, and even physically what we're about to face if they can go back to a minimalist lifestyle and be able to live with minimum food, good food. You can eat less and survive more.
Right. Yep. Beans and rice and potatoes and boiled potatoes, that is, not French fries. And
we actually have a caller. I see him on the line, and this is who I was talking about, and he is totally a minimalist.
Oh, good.
Yeah. 336.
How's it going, man?
Hi, you on the air, Chris?
How's it going? Yeah, I.
You are totally a minimalist.
Yeah, I am. And I think. That will lead to greater productivity because it gives a clear vision of the goal. I think sometimes when you have so many options, you never become an expert, perhaps, at simple things. And
would you talk about how you told me last night that you eat very, very little food, yet I can tell by your pictures that you're very healthy.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I eat a lot of oatmeal, and it's very cheap foods. I mean, it's not, I definitely don't eat a vast, complex diet. I probably only consumed 20 different foods for years. I think, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, keeping it very simple.
How old are you now, Chris?
I'm 31, so I've not eaten much. I've been eating healthy, very healthy and minimal-wise. I probably used to eat even less back in the 1990s through 2003, but then I began to cook more. So, you know, even before I was able to cook, it was even more minimal. And Yeah, a lot of dried fruit. And
yes.
But, you know, the point that got me, that I noticed, was that you were saying how there's so much going on in the world in this time, and that is true. Not, you know, there's a lot of people who are working for y'all's same cause who don't know, you know, they're very disconnected, and they're maybe not completely educated about it. And so I don't, you know, and they may be the people with money, or they may just be people that have a lifestyle set up where they can move and not really have to think about things very clearly. I mean, because if you're able to, you know, see groups of people every day and you receive income, and that's, you know, you'll start to tell yourself you're actually doing something. Because other people were telling you that.
Wow. You know. Well, you will enjoy her book. We'll get one to you because you're in a remote part of the country. And, Vicki, this virtual study group is totally for folks like Chris. We found each other on – well, Chris, you found me on Facebook, and we won't.
Yeah, I did.
I
just had seen a small comment Anne had made, and I knew right away she was thinking clearly.
Oh,
I mean,
thank you, Chris. Well, it's nice to know that. And you've read the book, Chris, for over.
Oh yeah, I've read it four times straight through, and I've probably read it another two or three times, you know, around, and then you know, there. Who knows what you know? Some days I pick it up and just read parts, but I've definitely read it.
And you live in such a room. I'm sorry. There's a delay on the sound. That's why it's
oh, okay.
And you live in such a remote part of the world that you cannot attend a study group.
Yeah, I have never. Yeah, I have. No one's visited me in my apartment that I'm staying in right now for years. I have not seen it. Yeah, I never see anybody. And I mean, but I don't. But
are
I get a lot of thinking done. You know,
are
so
you
I
a
don't
hermit?
Know. If,
Chris, are you a young hermit?
Well, you know, I'm not like antisocial. I'm just very productive oriented. So, I mean, I have work to do, and if I have to be by myself to get work done, that's how it has to be. I mean, so it's not like I'm, you know, I don't, I think maybe, I see time in a long time to me could be 20 years, not a year. So a year by myself doesn't feel, it feels like a day.
Wow. Vicki, that's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Vicki, getting back to your book, because he is interested in your book because of his minimalist lifestyle, and he is a man of the soil and the
Yeah, what are you writing about here, Vicki?
Well, I'm writing about the problem of overeating. And we're looking at, we look at it as a self-mastery issue. And there's a lot of stuff in the Arantia book that, especially what Jesus says about how we can rise above the conflict between our material and our spiritual nature by entering the kingdom of heaven. And so it was really Anne... It was probably 6 years into this, after I decided I was going to try to work on this problem of self-mastery, I heard Anne speak at a conference near Montreal, which was in 1993. And I think I must have picked up a study guide of hers called Passport to Eternity there.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, I was asked by, well, it's not really that strange, but one of our society members asked me to give a presentation on some aspect of Jesus' teachings. And so as I was thumbing through the book, I thought, well, maybe I should talk about Jesus' teachings and the kingdom of heaven, because he talks about the kingdom of heaven quite a bit. And then, and because I had this book, this study guide that Anne has, Passport to Eternity, I turned to the section on... I think it was called Spiritual Transformation. She had a lot of it's Transformation Through Faith. She had a lot of citations from the Arantia book in there, and I started looking up those citations, and it had to do with the kingdom of heaven and about spiritual transformation. And I began to realize, wow, I just never realized how much I had been missing in Jesus' teachings. I just hadn't taken the kingdom of heaven seriously, or the idea of being born of the Spirit and being spiritually transformed by doing the will of God, desiring God's presence, doing His will, and so then I began to apply what I learned about the kingdom of heaven, those teachings. I began to apply that to what I was trying to do with the problem of overeating and the issue of self mastery. So I guess is that answering your question?
Yeah, that's very interesting. My brother is very overweight, actually, and he could use that book. I don't know if he'd sit down and read it, but
your brother is overweight?
Oh yeah, he's a big guy, so I mean I don't know if it's, but he's about 6'3", 380 pounds, 370.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, he gets a lot of invitations to be bouncers. He's a big guy. But I mean, you know, but he is big. So I mean, I'm not 6'3". I'm 6'1". So I don't know.
That's pretty tall, you know.
Yeah, it could be some genetics in there.
Well, my brother, I have only one brother, and I was talking to my uncle. I have two uncles still alive. One is he's only 76. And believe me, that's very young to me now. And my other uncle, his brother is 95. And we were talking about both of them are very slim, yet my brother, the only brother I have, was very slim. But when he got older, he began to take on these habits of bad eating habits, and it becomes, whoops, there's my phone.
My brother took on bad. He was living a lot better for a while, and then it. I think he got lazy about it, and then it became
Vicki, would you approach that addiction again? Because I believe it's all about addiction to the process. If you begin to slowly focus on the more natural foods and avoid a lot of sugar. Now, sugar to me was sugar cane growing up.
Yeah.
Going out to the field. Vicki, how do you approach that in your book? Because it really is about being addicted to the food that we eat. What are you addicted to?
Right. Well, what I try to say in my book, and this comes from my own experience, is I began to, after working on this problem for a while, I began to identify foods that were what I call easy to manage foods.
Easy
and what I mean by that,
easy
to manage. This is just a term that I use. I didn't get it from anywhere. It's just the way I try to explain it. But I look at the world of food through that lens. Will this food be easy to manage or not? And what I mean by that, will this food tell me whether I am full or whether I am hungry? Hunger and fullness. Mm-hmm. And so I try to choose, I try to rely on foods that sort of tell me the truth about whether I'm hungry or full. Like, for example, yogurt might be one of those foods for a lot of people that would tell the truth to them. They might see it in the refrigerator, and when they see it, if they're not really hungry, they might say to themselves, well, that looks good, but maybe later. But if they saw, for example, some chocolate milk, fully sweetened chocolate milk, they might just grab it anyway, whether or not they're full or hungry. And then I would classify that as being a difficult to manage food. Because of the way we respond to it. And I think, you know, the modern world is just increasingly overburdened with difficult to manage foods, very difficult to manage foods that are full of fat, sugar, and salt, and other chemicals and additives that make us want to keep eating past fullness or to start eating even when we're not hungry. So that's the lens in which I look at it, and I give a listing of foods that, for me, I identified as being easy to manage, and I'm guessing that I'm pretty normal and that this might be quite useful to other people as well, this listing of easy-to-manage foods.
I'm
and what
looking
I try to do
book.
Is rely on those, and those are simple foods.
What are those, please? Can you list those, please?
Sure. The easy-to-manage foods are fruits. I'll just tick them off real quickly first. Fruits, along with juices that are, the 100% juices, what I call easy-to-manage dairy. And that's
now,
that
what
I need
does
to
that
explain.
That's interesting, because
yeah.
I struggle with dairy.
Yeah. Well, the easy-to-manage dairy are milk and yogurt and cottage cheese and sour cream. Those are the and what the difficult to manage dairy would be things like cheese and ice cream, those kinds of things. But the easy to manage dairy, these are the four that don't seem to give me any problem. I can manage them very well. I don't overeat them. That would be milk and cottage cheese, yogurt, and sour cream. So I rely on those for dairy. And then, so far I've said fruit, easy to manage dairy, and then there's vegetables and oil. I link
now, when
oil
you say
vegetables,
are there specific vegetables?
Basically, I'm talking all vegetables. However, I put potatoes into my next category, which are the whole starches. I call them whole starches. So there's really four categories: fruit, easy dairy, vegetables linked with oil, and whole starches. And whole starches are the beans and rice and other grains, and the cooked beans, cooked rice, and other grains, and potatoes.
Now, what kind of rice do you eat, Vicki?
Any kind of rice. I prefer the brown rice because of its nutritional value, but any kind of rice is okay.
We have another caller. This is a true study group. 714, you're on the air.
Hello, Ann.
Oh, it's young Dave, and he's struggling with this.
Yes, ma'am. That's definitely fair to say. I wanted to call in because the subject hits awful close to home. I've been struggling with self-mastery, and, of course, food is one of the major areas for me. I think a lot of the problem, or at least in my opinion, is that I associate emotion with food. So if I'm in a good mood, oh, it's time to eat something really good and fattening. If I'm in a bad mood, oh, I better find the nearest bottle of Rocky Road to quench. I mean, and a lot of times it's habit forming. Like myself, I don't feel that I eat I don't eat too much in quantity, but I eat terribly, and I just really have a bad taste for vegetables. It's just something that I've had since I was a kid, and I think it's more mental than anything. But and I want to learn how to be able to overcome the my own blockage that I'm putting there. And
you know,
I recognize.
What I think I would say is like when listening to all this is like I eat actually a lot of food at a time, though. I eat huge, like, large amounts of food, but I use, like, a very large amount of calories in my work. So I'm sitting here wondering if perhaps you guys should just match your calorie output more to your calorie intake. Because
right.
When I go to work, if I don't eat, I don't have energy. So I don't get any work done. So it's
now,
like,
y'all are about the same age. Dave, how old are you?
I'm 30. I turned 31 this year.
Yeah, I'm 31. Well, I'm 31. I'll be 32 soon. So, I mean, you just need to make sure that, you know what, go out and do all the work you can until you don't have any energy. and then go eat. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely square plug goes in square hole. That makes sense.
What is your job, Dave?
That's exactly what it is. My job is I'm an admissions counselor for a university, and all day long I'm sitting in a chair staring at a computer, and then it's showtime for me all day long. It's showtime. I'm the singing dancing monkey, and so when you get home you're kind of like kaput. You want to kick your shoes off. You want to indulge in something and go to sleep.
And what's part of the thing about that job too is that it's engendering a pretense which isn't natural, which is for you to sit in that chair. That's not natural for you.
Yeah.
So you're taking your income, which is good, but I mean you're losing your own natural instinct to get up and move. And who knows? You may not be that friendly to those people naturally. That may be of artificial.
Well, I think it kind of comes natural to me. It's been like that since I was about one. So the friendliness definitely is, even if I was skinny or fat or in between, who I am.
But fitness creates a different hormone situation.
True, yeah.
I mean, it increases testosterone and adrenaline, which
the releasing of endorphins,
Well, let me say this about this. Dave, you're out there with our daughter, who lives out in California. She lives in Venice. You live a little farther south.
Right.
And Chris is on the other side of the country. Vicki, in what state are you in, Vicki?
I'm in Wisconsin.
I love this. We really
love Green Bay.
Now, Dave, Dana is a producer in Hollywood, and a lot of that is sitting because she's, standing, sitting, waiting, getting everything
together.
We're
talking about this lady.
What she does? Whatever the call time is that she's, call time meaning everybody has to be on set, no matter what time it is. One discipline that Dana had to set up because she's had trouble with her digestive tract her entire life.
Mm.
She gets up one and a half hours early, and she walks to Gold's Gym or rides her bike every morning because she says, people don't understand it. If I don't do this, I will not have the energy to be a producer. Now, isn't that an irony?
Yeah.
Vicki, don't you love these young people getting a handle on this?
Yes. Dave, you mentioned emotional eating.
Yeah.
I think. And one of the things that I learned when I first, that really encouraged me and intrigued me when I started trying to figure this stuff out, was I realized that I was overeating for security, relaxation, stimulation, and pleasure.
Wow.
And just going back over that, it was like,
would you
turn
repeat
to food.
Those? Would you repeat those?
Yeah, I will.
Roger,
yeah, I will. When I would be feeling insecure, I might turn to food. That would be security.
Yeah.
If I needed to calm down, then I would turn to food, relaxation. The next one is stimulation, if I was maybe bored. I would turn to food for stimulation or pleasure, just plain pleasure. And so I realized I was using food to meet some of those sort of basic fundamental feelings, And at the time that I was realizing that, I had some Bible verses that were going through my head. I grew up in a Christian church, and so I knew the Bible fairly well. And there were some Bible passages that started floating through my brain from Psalms and Isaiah. And it kind of planted the idea that I would elevate security to love. Mm-hmm. I would elevate relaxation to peace, stimulation to hope, and pleasure to joy. That really, we're trying to find when if we're overeating or engaging in temptation of any sort, we're trying to experience these spiritual emotions of love, peace, hope, and joy. And in a sense, I was using food to control my own happiness, and I guess that's where the emotional eating comes in. We're always trying to regulate our happiness state.
Right.
But in the end, then, what we are using, and in my case it was food, the food ends up controlling me.
It becomes like a sort of silhouette of
It's a cycle.
Definitely.
Yeah, for myself recently, I think I've gained 30 pounds in the last 3 months, and I quit smoking. I haven't smoked a cigarette since Super Bowl Sunday, and
than overeat.
I figured, you know, the lesser of two evils, I'll give up smoking at least, you know. So I'm very happy about that. However, I found it very, very hard to not keep my mouth entertained. And talking just doesn't cut it anymore. So, it's really weird because I love water and I would never drink sodas or beer or anything that to like that. And then after quitting smoking, I've been drinking soda like it's going out of style. And I usually play frisbee golf on Friday nights and try to do something active, but that's like one day a week. I need to get out there at least 3 or 4 days a week or every day if possible, even if it's only like a half an hour. But that's my biggest trouble, is making the time, managing my time for exercise, and two, being able to control what I eat, the amounts I eat, and the time that I eat. And it's so weird because I thank the Father every single day while I was quitting smoking for giving me the strength for quitting that day. And by doing that and engaging in that type of prayer, it absolutely helped me with smoking cigarettes. And now I don't crave anything. I could be around people who smoke cigarettes and it doesn't bother me whatsoever. And when I remember being a smoker, I was thinking, at that time, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to quit smoking. There's absolutely no way. I'm too afraid of it. It will never happen. And I ended up doing it. And now it's baffling me that I can't get a control on my eating habits and my exercising. And I tried doing the same thing, but I guess maybe I'm not doing wholehearted effort into it. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, I mean, I think part of the thing is that, if you were suddenly fit today, you may very well get up and exercise very well. It may just be that you have, if you can achieve, just like you're saying, you've quit smoking, it's easy now. Well, once you're fit, it'll be easy. It's a lot easier to be, it's a lot easier to work for 8 hours if you only weigh, if you're only bone and muscle. So I think just keep going and then look back on it. It's don't necessarily try to predict, what you won't be able to do. Aim high, man. Aim
Nikki,
real high.
Yeah, I wanted to say about this idea of trying to take control, the typical things that we hear from motivational speakers and from diet gurus and things like that is that we need to take control, we need to motivate, we need to apply willpower, and then we need to self-monitor.
Mm.
And I think that in some case, if a person is in complete escape mode or very complacent, that kind of advice can be quite helpful. But when you're deeply into the struggle and you're really trying, and those things are just not working, you're getting frustrated because you can't seem to get a handle on it. You can't take control. That motivation starts fluctuating. Sometimes you've got high motivation, and then other times you just forget the whole thing, and you can hardly remember why you wanted to lose weight in the first place,
Right.
And the Urantia book does, Jesus does say that there is a certain folly in depending upon willpower. And another problem comes in is that as we're self-monitoring, our self-involvement increases, and that's not real good for our spiritual life. And so, and one of the first things I try to tell people about how Jesus's teachings on the kingdom of heaven can help them is that instead of, if you're really struggling with taking control, maybe you need to just let go of it and let go of trying to take control and depend on God.
Wow.
Because nature will make you fit, man. I mean, the pressure is there to make you fit. It's
right.
It's going to push you in that direction.
Right. And you need to start, daily in prayer, depending on God, you know, trusting God. Just, you know, say to yourself, you know, I trust you, I love you. And really depend, rest in God's arms, lean on God. This is sort of the beginnings of finding emotional wholeness, so that we don't have to reach out for food in order to control our happiness, you know, and our wholeness, feeling of wholeness. We need to practice this dependence on God. And there's a wonderful section in the Faith of Jesus, the last paper of the Urantia book, that talks about Jesus' sense of dependence on God. I'm just trying to look for it here in my readings here. Yeah, right. He says, let's see, he depended upon the Heavenly Father as a child leans upon its earthly parent, and his fervent faith never for one moment doubted the certainty of the Heavenly Father's overcare. And then it also says, his sense of dependence on the divine was so complete and so confident that it yielded the joy and assurance of absolute personal security. And so to me, that's like the first step in releasing ourselves from this use of food for our emotional happiness, is to learn to depend, develop that sense of dependence on God.
Yeah, and that points to like a sort of transcendental hope also, in the sense that, I mean, there's so much else going on while we may suffer our own habits, that, you know, the goodness that's out there far outweighs our perhaps problem. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
right.
And there's a lot of spiritual things that go on while we make our decisions about our own health. So,
right.
Two things I want to say before I forget. Dave, Chris, y'all have a common bond with music, gentlemen.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm a musician. I don't know if I've never met Dave, but I'm sure he I'd be willing to compete against him any time.
Dave, tell Chris what y'all do before every Thursday night study group.
Well, yeah, before every Thursday night study group, we definitely jam. Robert is on the drums, Pierre's on lead guitar, I'm on rhythm guitar. A lot of times we'll also get another brother Robert to come in and either play guitar with us or pick up the bass, but it's just so wonderful because it's rejuvenating. You know, you're refueling your jets, and it's a good way to express yourself and release a lot of the tension and emotion that's built up throughout that day. And then also right at the beginning of every one of our study groups as well, we take a moment of silence. And
yeah.
And you're free to take as long as you like or as short as you like, and boy, I just love that. I there's nothing to me like being able to sit in quiet amongst other people who are also thinking of God at that moment and asking the angels to help out with our study group, and it's just so wonderful. I look forward to it. In fact, I crave it, and if I don't go to study group, I really, really have a tough week if I don't make it.
Yeah, we have a very spiritual approach on music. We really, I mean, like, we really believe sound is a very real and almost being-like presence.
Hmm.
You know, we really deal with sound like it could reach out and, you know, touch us. I mean,
well, Chris, who do you, you've done some recording. Who do you
record
with?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working with a lot of small musicians. I grew up doing a lot of, you know, really intense high amplification music, you know, millions of dollars worth of amps these guys had, and very loud. You could hear it from 10 miles away. And then I went and worked with a lot of the Nyabingi, you know, the where music the root of the music is coming from the Nyabingi drums. And I worked with them for a couple of years. That's how I introduced to your Ranger book, and then produced bluegrass for about 3 or 4 years, and then I worked with a bunch of college bands, and then I took it. Then I just, you know, went into the woods and started rehearsing with the wind. So I've done quite a lot of musical things. My drummer's in L.A. right now. I hope he's doing good out there.
Oh, he's trying to get a start in the...
Well, I don't know if he's trying to get a start. He's just trying to get away from the woods here. There's not much going on out here.
Well, I'm trying to get my good friend Lisa to call from Austin. Dave, you go and you tell her to call. She's in the window. Because she lives an isolated life.
You know we want to hear you, Sister Lisa. Come on. All the cool people are doing it. No peer pressure.
By the way, Chris, they're asking if they can be your friend and on Facebook.
Yeah, y'all can. My name is Chris Michael on there. You guys can, or you can find me on Ann's page. I'm sure she could direct you there. Yeah,
and
I've got a couple new discs out that I haven't. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to take another call, but before we do, Vicki.
Yes.
You had talked about being inspired by Passport to Eternity, which was an inspired study group, study guide of mine. Actually, it was put together in the 80s. And, gentlemen, I'll send you a copy because it's hard to post it on the web because it's a little booklet. But it's steps that I developed by the guidance of the Spirit that you first have to, and these are pretty logical, but really, if you don't participate in these steps, you're going to continue fighting the battles through the human mind rather than in the soul consciousness. One, moral self-consciousness, and we know when that happens, about age 4 or 5. Number two, open-mindedness. If you're not open-minded to other ideas, you're not going to be able to open up to the next one, which is truly transformation through faith, a rebirth experience. And from that point, you can request an infilling, a filling up of the power of the Spirit in and through your life. Number four, out of this will come an importance of balanced growth. Balanced growth, mind, body, and spirit. And that comes first through the next step, the inner life, the inner workings. Next, the outer life. If you don't manifest it outwardly through the fruits of the Spirit and through social interactions like we're doing now, isolation, Chris, you know isolation over isolation.
Yeah, it's only going to make things too real.
And then the last two, we can live on this planet in this life in the Marantia consciousness. The papers tell us clearly. That's it. Vicki, what do you say there?
Well, this was certainly this booklet was certainly an important part of my spiritual growth and insight when I was really struggling during the early times of my when I was trying to figure this self-mastery stuff out. And the transformation through faith is what really, really hit me, was how much we need, we need to take seriously this idea of becoming new creatures. That's both in the Bible and the Urantia book. And being born of the Spirit, I mean, there's some amazing statements, especially in the Lesson on Self-Mastery, how the self-control or self-mastery is a fruit of the Spirit, and it comes through when we are transformed through faith.
And without those stages, we will continue to fight our own human nature. It's like a young lady that I've known for 8 years was struggling, and she told me yesterday, she said, "I'm really struggling. I'm sitting here at my desk, And I've seen it with her, with all this sweet food. And I said, okay, number one, switch over immediately to natural sugar, natural. And the chocolate, switch over immediately to real chocolate. Because you actually, Vicki, what about real chocolate? What do you think about that?
Well, I would classify chocolate, I know that there has been a more of a push towards the darker chocolate, the more natural chocolate, but for myself, I still have to keep all of chocolate in the difficult-to-manage category. That's not to say I don't eat it once in a while, but because I just try to reduce consumption of the difficult-to-manage foods. So I do, you know, have it as a treat once in a while. But what I found with chocolate is that if it was in my range, if I had, like, say, chocolate milk versus 100% fruit juice or something, you know, that I would always choose the chocolate instead. And I prefer to focus on fruit and fruit flavors. And I'm really not afraid of added sugars to fruit.
Oh, you mean the artificial? You mean like the processed sugar?
Well, I mean the more natural, the better, of course.
Yeah,
because
they've proven that the other sugar can be very addictive.
Yeah, they say something about the high fructose corn syrup has been.
Oh yeah, and see that's different from cane sugar. Because cane, we used to make molasses when I was growing up. You know what? If you don't mind, we have another caller, and I'm going to take a chance here. I'm not sure where this area code is. I know I recognize 512, I think. Okay, they're not asking to speak yet. Okay,
well,
let's take this call. Let's see who this is. 208, you're on the air.
Oh, that's me. This is Cassandra Orgila, and I'm in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Hi, nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've met you, Ann, but I've been a Urantia book reader, and I'm on your Facebook, one of your friends on Facebook, but I've been a Urantia book reader since the late 70s, and I'm also a health practitioner.
Wow.
And been into food and diet. I'm a colon therapist. So, you know, I've done that for 23 years.
Well, that's
and
critical, that colon. We don't like to talk about it, but, boy, that's critical.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, nutrition is what I talk to people about. So this is the first time I've actually been on listening to Cosmic Citizen, although I've really been interested in it for quite a while. So, how interesting that this morning I was doing my Facebook and happened to see that you're on a topic that I'm definitely, you know,
interested
in. And the one thing I want to add is that the thing that I find is so important when you're dealing with foods like you guys are is that you have to cleanse. If you don't clean out what you've put in your body all those years, all the sweets and all those cravings, if you don't actually do a cleanse, then you don't get rid of that craving.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the way I find it works. So,
Dave, you're in a perfect part of the country. I've actually flown there because of the purity of how in those big whole life expos we learned a lot, Paul and I did. And Dave, I promise you, if you couple what she just said and read Vicki's book in combination with that inner life and outer life growth, you watch what's going to happen. It's quite remarkable. The energy.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that because the body is addicted to the toxins that's still in it?
Yeah, the toxins, to me, the toxins are almost like an entity in themselves asking you to put back, you know, they want that stuff. You know, you've gotten used to it. It's also cleansing also affects you on an emotional level. And that's already been brought up, how, you know, food is emotion. It absolutely is.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, is your body, if I've been eating healthy for a long time, but to an individual, say, that hadn't and was trying to start eating healthy, is his body actually feeding off the toxins that are in his system? I mean, does it feed?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. It's just that the research is showing that you can't actually really lose weight unless you detox. You can't keep it off.
Vicki, what do you, Vicki, have you done any research into what she's talking about?
Well, what I tend to think of in terms of cleanse is, you know, because we live in this modern world of all these processed foods, we have become so used to them that they are what tastes good to us. And I think her idea of cleanse, you know, to me it means that when you need to have, there's like a period of time that you have to go through where the simple and natural foods might not be very appealing because you're so used to the foods that have so many additives and are engineered to keep you eating and stuff, that at first it's going to be a bit of a hard sell to tell somebody to eat fruits, vegetables,
yeah, you'll probably
oil.
Be nauseous.
Yeah, right. They just, you know, you'd think, oh, man, I'd never want to eat that stuff. You know, it doesn't appeal to me at all. But in a sense, like this idea of cleanse, it takes you through that transition period. So that then the natural foods will actually start to taste really good to you.
And you'll probably be able
actually,
to intake them, too.
You, it actually changes the way food tastes to you. Your cravings for sugar will definitely be decreased. Your craving for salt, you know.
Yes.
I gave up salt years ago, and, you know, a lot of the foods, like if I go to a fast food place, it is so salty.
Yeah.
It's like, it just changes the way, you know, things taste to you.
Right. Yeah. If you're not used to eating that kind of food, then it tastes terrible.
Okay, let's take a survey right now, because we're all in the United States. Okay, let's start on your side of the sea, over there on the eastern side. Okay, well, let's just start. Okay, what did you have for breakfast, Chris?
Oh, I had a sip of water.
Oh, you're fasting.
Yeah, that's how I've had since 8 p.m. last night, was about an ounce of water.
Well, okay, well.
And I've been out and done about 5 hours of work this morning.
Of course, you know, you have to be careful with that. Jesus admonished us that, you know, he ate frugally at times. I have a friend that fasts a lot, and I said, okay, we're not going to talk about that, you know, because you know how I feel. But his particular destiny is very specific on the planet, but he's very careful with it. He's
I can't eat rocks or I would. I'd eat dirt, believe me.
Vicki, what did you eat today?
Well, I ate what I usually eat in the morning, and that is I always have a glass of milk and also some kind of fruit. And I usually have some kind of a preserved fruit rather than fresh fruit because for some reason fresh fruit doesn't sit well with me in the morning. So I had some applesauce, which is a preserved fruit. And then I also have coffee in the morning. And I usually put half and half in there, so I had some fat with the half and half. I do think it's important to have fat with every meal because otherwise I start craving fatty food.
Well, you know, that's an irony about weight. I've talked to our daughter about it because she's only 5 feet and she gets a little, you know, oh, my goodness. And I said, you know, the good fat is that's not what's going to hurt you. And she's actually gotten much better at it. She realized she has more energy with the natural fat.
Yeah.
Okay, moving across the country, let's see. Cassandra, what did you have for breakfast? Have you eaten yet?
Well, usually I'll do a smoothie.
What is your smoothie?
Actually, I use Isagenix, and it's a protein. It's a whey protein. But this morning I haven't had a chance to do that, so I've been eating fruit. I've eaten cherry.
You've already had
and
your
apple.
Fruit. Mm-hmm. And because it's go ahead.
I try to do it all through this morning. I try and eat all my fruit in the morning, and I don't do fruit later on in the day because I don't like to combine it with food. I just have trouble with that.
You know what?
And
a lot of people don't realize that the way our digestive tract, right, because of, again, learning from those big expos, from those health experts, how fast does fruit digest? It takes less than 30 minutes, right?
Well, and the thing is, it doesn't digest in the stomach. It digests in the small intestine, so it wants to go right through the stomach.
Wow. And
that's
then vegetables, how long does it?
Understand.
And even fruit,
it doesn't take,
I
doesn't
go ahead,
take
I'm
very long, but it, but if you put it with your food, then it ferments your food, and then you know.
Things like melon rot in the stomach really quickly, like within minutes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, I just got an image of that. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
I mean.
I avoid mixing the acid fruits with the I had my apples this morning, natural apples, or you know sometimes I'll do the other because an apple a day does help keep the doctor away. I waited a while and I'm drinking natural orange juice. I mean like real orange juice.
Yeah.
And then the vegetable kingdom, Dave, we haven't asked what you've eaten. Do you want to tell us? He may have had to hang up. He's at work.
He's going to be like, I had a soda and
Dave, are you still with us? Sometimes
he has to
hang up because he's at work and he has to counsel somebody.
He had to interview somebody.
But I have observed Dave's eating habits, and this is going to be life-changing for him because he has a deep desire to modify. He's a wonderful, spiritual young man, and he has a desire. And, you know, desire goes a long way. Now, the next level, vegetables.
Okay, go ahead. Can I ask you, what is his last name?
Dave?
Dave. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, on Facebook, Dave Tucker.
Tucker, okay.
And both
both of my sons are in Southern California now, and love to get them connected.
Absolutely,
so.
Vicki, are you on Facebook yet?
No, I'm not.
We love it. That's how Chris and I met.
Yeah, you can meet all kinds. You can meet real beautiful people there.
Yeah.
That encouraged me to eat even healthier, like really.
Okay, Vicki and
yes.
Vicki,
yes.
Cassandra, you can both of you can come in here. What about meat, Vicki?
Well, for meat, I classify that as difficult to manage rather than easy to manage for myself. So I still do eat meat, but like I say, I try to reduce consumption of the difficult-to-manage foods.
Of the meats, how do you categorize them?
No, I don't. I certainly appreciate when people do categorize the different different types of meat. I mean, a lot of people would say, you know, the lean poultry is so much better than eating sausage, of course. But I really don't get into that. When I look at food, I look at it completely through the lens of will this be easy for me to manage or difficult, and you know I don't get into a lot of the scientific ways that people look at food.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm
really fascinated by that you have a different a way of looking at it, because there are I've been doing this for so many years. There are so many studies and so many different things. My clients will say, well, but one thing says this. You know, the blood type says you should do this. And then this other philosophy says you should do this. So I really like, Vicki, the approach you have. I'm going to have to get your book, definitely.
It kind of arose out of, have you heard of intuitive eating or mindful?
Sure.
It kind of arose out of that. I felt like I needed a little bit. I liked the idea of eating when you're hungry and stopping.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can do that. But for me then, I found that I needed some extra help, and where I found the help was from the food themselves. The food themselves tell me.
Right, and your ability to have some control.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
well,
that's
taps
great.
Back. That
yeah.
taps back into.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that taps back into self-mastery. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, from my perspective of the meats, my whole perspective of the food and everything comes from like oxygen, herbs, then food, and then meat. So a lot of times, I mean, if you're really feeling healthful, just the sight of dead flesh itself is very, you know, I mean, there's a lot of plants out there that one can opt to gain energy from. And I would just say that, you know, if someone were to suddenly be in full awareness of their actions, they, you know, they may not have the same appeal to meat as they did before. I eat meat occasionally, but it makes me, you know, it's really a, it feels like a breach of my consciousness almost. It's
and,
really,
well, and there you live amongst the animals. That's interesting.
Yeah, I do, and I see a lot of animals every day. I see the same animals every day. I see the same frogs hopping. I see the same deer for several years. And, you know, I would just say, you know, that if you had the right plants, you would never eat meat. You know, and those plants are out there. They might not be legal, but they're out there.
I'm not so sure I'd agree with that.
Okay, give you.
Why did God put all
these
animals?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm an herbalist. I've worked with herbalists in the Caribbean islands for years. You know, we culture and ferment lots of plants. You know, we boil poison ivy and drink it.
Okay, Cassandra, go ahead, please.
I do, I teach the blood type diet, and I've seen some major results with the blood type diet, especially with people that are O type and aren't eating enough meat.
See, my husband is O type, and he does have to have, he is leaning away from the heavier pork and beef. I'm A type.
I don't eat pork. Yeah, that's me too. And you know Thomas, right?
Yeah, very well.
Yes, okay. Well, Thomas is one of my examples of someone who, you know, did not eat meat, had a, you know, a whole spiritual thing about meat, and he's O. And when he started eating, you know, more protein, getting more protein, and not doing carbs, it changed his life.
Wow.
He had had an accident right out of high school and had 3 crushed vertebrae in his low back that bothered him all the time, every day. And when he started getting the protein that he needed, within 6 months, that pain was gone.
Wow.
And it's, you know, so I've seen it work that way. So now for me, I grew up in a family, hunter. My dad was a hunter, and I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we had a lot of fresh things. I was really, you know, grateful for that. But we ate a lot of meat, and I had a lot of stomach aches as a kid. I have very bad digestion for meat. I don't do well with meat.
Well, see, I was raised on a farm, and similar to what Chris is saying, I had to look those animals in the eye even when it was time to take their life. And therefore,
yeah.
I had been a type A, plus being on the farm with all those animals. I personally have not had beef or pork in my body since the early 90s. And fish, depending on the fish, the clean fish, by that I mean I haven't had shellfish in years and years because, you know, they're bottom feeders, and we're all going to have to watch.
Yeah, we only eat small. The culture type thing I deal with, we only eat the small fish, like the ones that jump out of the water.
Well, that's a good point. They got to jump out of the water.
You want them real thin and flying around.
You know what, Chris? You give us these incredible images.
Well, I mean, that's what you guys just got to keep thinking, because that's what they don't want you to do. They want you to see the box of food and stop thinking. You guys got to be like,
well, you're
brevity,
talking.
Like,
you're talking to the choir here, Vicki. Vicki, I love your idea of listening to your body.
Yeah, sometimes people call it mindful eating, conscious eating, intuitive eating. Those are all words, phrases that are used for that idea. Intuitive eating also.
I like one section of your book. I thought it was interesting, Vicki. You call it The Devil is in the Details.
Oh, yeah.
Can you explain that, please?
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you really start to try to apply your dietary ideas to your daily life and to all the various things that come up during the day. You know, that's when it gets pretty difficult sometimes.
You know, something we should remember, too, that all of us are speaking from a subtropical climate, so none of us have, like, a clear vision of what actually, you know, is possible for the garden. You know, none of us have.
Subtropical? Not me.
Well, all of us are on North America continent. None of us live in Mexico.
Listen to where
it's
not tropical.
None of us are equatorial at all.
I'm in Idaho. I'm in the mountains.
Yeah, well, that's even further than subtropical, but only by about 100 miles. You know, subtropics go all the way up to Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm way up north. I'm almost in Canada, so when you say subtropical,
you have even a more skewed view. I mean, we got to remember that we're, you know, ideally we have a garden with thousands of options every day.
Oh, I will.
So you got to make sure you, well, I mean, if you're developing your philosophy, you'd be best to start from there, not to start from what
is. I have a huge garden.
You can't grow 90% of what is pot. You can't grow, you know, noni.
No.
You can't grow a lot. There's roots that are 8 feet thick. You know, they eat yams that are 12 feet long down there now. So I mean, there's all kinds. So I mean, it might be better to just scrap everything we thought so far and start over, to be honest.
Well, Vicki, getting back, I want to talk about how you. I totally recommend that everybody that's listening to this does go into the archives. We do have people listening by Facebook that you don't even see here. And I am just amazed at the ease of reading your book. So many people that write health books, They write it in such a way that's too much. I can't get there. And Vicki, you made a comment when I saw you. And by the way, do you and Cassandra know each other?
No, I don't think so.
Wow, I love this. When we were together in Chicago, you said, "Well, I'm not an expert, but yet I looked at your degrees. You are a sociologist and an anthropologist, am I right?"
I have a bachelor's degree in sociology and anthropology, yeah.
Well, that's human nature. I mean, you really get it. So you applied that great knowledge. Cassandra, do you have a degree of, I'm sure you're certified, and I respect that so much.
I'm certified, but no, I don't have any degrees. Nope.
Sometimes
just
degrees can actually
lots of experience.
We really appreciate you calling. This is awesome.
Yeah, mainly I used for my book primarily my personal experience with the problem of overeating, and I think I had mentioned at the beginning I was trying to lose 10 pounds. Well, I told Ann that what happened after after I committed myself to try to solve this problem, it took me a lot longer than what I thought. It took me 20 years to work my way through everything that I wanted to learn and needed to learn. And during that process, I gained 60 pounds.
Wow.
And so in a sense, I don't know why that happened exactly. It could be because the more you focus on a problem, the more entangled you get. And I was focusing really hard on the problem. Maybe I needed to fully experience the problem in order to eventually solve it for myself, and I'm hoping that it'll help other people also. But yeah, I really did, you know, get deeply into it.
Yeah, well, I went 250 in
1997
to weigh in. I went down to 180, and I've been at that weight for the last 13 years.
Wow.
So mine went down immediately. Like, as soon as I decided that's what I was going to do, it was like within 2 months I was at my permanent weight.
Wow.
You know what's good about
lineman.
You lost that much weight in 2 months?
No. Well, I mean, like, within not 2 months, but I mean, looking back, I mean, it was definitely between 1998 and 1999. I definitely lost over 70 pounds.
Wow.
Or 70, 250 to 175, yeah, 75 pounds. I was a defensive lineman.
That's great.
You know what I like?
Part of me wants to say, boy, men seem to have an easier time losing weight when they really set their mind to it. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it is.
I think it has something to do with you being a woman.
Right.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. Men lose fat much easier. They don't have as much fat typically, but they do lose it.
Yeah.
But, wow, that's just amazing. And you did that without any particular diet, just deciding that.
Oh, man, it was just like rice. And, I mean, I had so little money, man. You guys, it was like rice and potatoes, basically.
So it's
then,
the poverty diet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that with the paranoia about, you know, about being unhealthy, because I wasn't healthy before that, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like, I had to eat quite a lot of food to play football.
Right.
So, I mean,
well, that's fantastic.
I want to say that the thing that really drew me into the call was your description about conventional wisdom, you know, about the whole thing about control, motivate, apply power, because this is a part of the book that I've always been fascinated with. And how Jesus shows us a new and better way.
I think I said a little bit about, you know, rather than taking control when we're deeply into a struggle with a self-mastery issue, sometimes what we need to do is relinquish control and start depending heavily on God and try to develop that great sense of dependence on God like Jesus had. But one thing that I found out about motivation, that's the second thing that, you know, motivational speakers say, is you got to just motivate, rev up your engines and, you know, get your motivation in gear and stuff like that. And what I found is that my motivation would fluctuate quite a bit, but what really would stabilize my higher desires, my motivation to eat right, lose weight, and, you know, just be master over this issue, what really helped me, and it will help in any kind of self-mastery issue, is desiring to do the will of God.
Mm.
That brings, that desire, you know, to do the will of God will strengthen your higher motivations and bring
it
up
also
to a higher level.
Yeah, it will also eliminate a lot of choices.
Right.
Eliminate
also,
a lot of
actually,
choices.
But actually, that's true what you say, but in another sense you can look at it. The will of God is actually freeing and it is expansive.
No,
you
I mean, I was saying it in a good way,
I understood what you were saying. But then, you know, there's the other part of it that that it also is expansive. You know, there's a wideness in God's, well, they say a wideness in God's mercy, but there's also a wideness in God's will, too, you know, that, you know,
yeah,
we will start to see options that we didn't see before.
That's what I was trying to say an hour ago, that while we go through this stuff, there's other, you know, there's other entities making decisions. So we may, if we could just get out of our own little world and plug into something more grand, you know, we could just ride the glory boat and not even, you know, and it should come naturally. If you're, you know, like when you're at work, you don't think about being bored, you know, so
right.
If you're
right.
occupied with the service of the kingdom, you will not, you know, you won't even be thinking about food.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're occupied with the service of the kingdom, you're not focusing on yourself, and you're focusing on the good of others, and it helps you to forget yourself and forget temptation.
You know, that's why getting prepared for this show, so many people that are missing the boat when they're not, everything they do, if they're not thinking this in terms of being of service, that everything we do, is it work? My mind does not separate at all for 30 years. Oh, I am working. Oh, wait, now I am serving.
Yeah.
If only a person would stop that. I've actually had people tell me recently, well, I would do more for what we're, you know, what we're about, but it's not work, and I have to devote myself to work. And that, I'm going to go back, put the kingdom first.
Right.
And all these things will be added unto you.
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Vicki, I want to go back to Passport to Eternity, because that, mm-hmm. it just keeps, I actually am going to look at trying to figure out a way to scan it because of the way it's laid out. I want to ask all three of you, because you're all longtime readers of the Urantia book. I gave those stages. How do you feel, where is the balance of living in the Urantia consciousness while we're still human? Vicki, I'll start with you. Number
Can
one.
Can you restate that? What is that question again?
The last stage of in that old study guide was Urantia life, living as if you were already in the other realms, in the mansion worlds.
Okay.
We're told very clearly that we can do that, and that's what will change the planet, the more of us. Where's the balance there? Because I observed this in you, that you truly are doing that in a very subtle way. Where is the balance, Vicki, in that lifestyle?
Well, as I'm looking at your section here called the Urantia life, I think, doesn't it seem to you that when we've entered the kingdom of heaven and we're progressing within the kingdom, does it seem to you that that's the spiritual mode of living, that's the new life, the transformed life, and that is essentially the Urantia life here on earth? Does that seem right to you, what I'm saying?
You're saying that the mind really makes a choice there to do that. Yeah.
Yes. When we are living in the kingdom of heaven, when we are trying to do God's will, sharing the inner life with God, using faith along with effort. I guess maybe that's the balance there that I see in what I wrote about in my book, is that, yes, we do have to put forth positive effort. And I think we see that in, like, the conditions of effective prayer. The first two conditions are being industrious. But then it goes on to then the remainder of the conditions of effective prayer have to do with desire and doing the will of God. And then the last one is you must have faith. And so it's faith, it's our desire to do the will of God, and it's our use of faith that the spirit of truth actually, to me, I picture it as the spirit of truth grabbing that faith that we have and lifting us up to a higher level, a spiritual mode of living, and that's the new life, becoming new creatures. And that's like the Marantia life, living here on earth. But yet at the same time, the balance is we also do have to keep putting forth positive effort and interacting in the world, of course. But, yeah, we still have to always be putting forth human effort as well.
Well, I think of a Bible scripture that don't become so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and also help me with this one, y'all. It's one a section of the book that I caught a hold of in the 80s that really hammered me about the seat of identity. Are y'all familiar with the seat of identity?
I'm familiar with a certain. I know my. Well, no, I don't. I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about, but I know.
I'll find it.
Go ahead.
Because it's okay.
I know the Marantia Temple. I'm familiar with that.
No, it's the seat of identity within our own minds. Where is your seat of identity? I actually find things faster in my physical book sometimes because I know pretty much where it is. Cassandra, are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Oh, it's a powerful section. And, of course, I have the one-column book. It's on in the – I know it's on the right-hand side. Okay, there it is. 1233. This is survival of the human self. And let's see, what paper is this? Paper 112, section 5. And I will read it because this is critical.
Is that the old book?
Yes.
The original book? Okay.
Right, and it's section 5 of that paper.
1233.
Right. This is a very critical section about the Marantia living.
Yeah. Survival of human self.
Yes. I will read it.
Okay.
Cassandra, have you found it?
Oh, yeah. Where are you?
Don't we start with, you see where it says... Vicki, do you have your book handy?
Yes, I've got it open to that section.
Okay, Chris, do you have yours? Well, are you still driving?
12-something here, 12-13.
Right, and we're going to have a real study group here.
What?
12-1-2-3-3.
All right.
Let's start with that section 5, and we'll go with Vicki. You read one paragraph. Chris? Cassandra and me, and we'll rotate because this is the way study groups function, and this was just quickened to me. So, Vicki, you start.
Okay, with paragraph 1.
Right.
Selfhood is a cosmic reality, whether material, Marantia, or spiritual. The actuality of the personal is the bestowal of the universal Father acting in and of himself or through his manifold universe agencies. To say that a being is personal is to recognize the relative individuation of such a being within the cosmic organization. The living cosmos is an all but infinitely integrated aggregation of real units, all of which are relatively subject to the destiny of the whole. But those that are personal have been endowed with the actual choice of destiny acceptance or of destiny rejection.
That which comes from the Father is like the Father eternal, and this is just as true of personality, which God gives by his own free will choice, as it is of the divine thought adjuster, an actual fragment of God. Man's personality is eternal, but with regard to identity, a conditioned eternal reality. having appeared in response to the Father's will, personality will attain deity destiny, but man must choose whether or not he will be present at the attainment of such destiny. In default, such a choice, personality attains experiential deity directly, becoming a part of the Supreme Being. The cycle is foreordained, but man's participation therein is optional, personal, and experiential.
You want me to read here?
Yes, Chris.
All right. Mortal identity is a transient time-life condition in the universe. It is real only insofar as the personality elects to become a continuing universe phenomenon. This is the essential difference between man and an energy system. The energy system must continue. It has no choice, but man has everything to do with determining his own destiny. The adjuster is truly the path to paradise, but man himself must pursue that path by his own deciding, his free will choosing.
Human beings possess identity only in the material sense. Such qualities of the self are expressed by the material mind as it functions in the energy system of the intellect. When it is said that man has identity, it is recognized that he is in possession of a mind circuit, which has been placed in subordination to the acts and choosing of the will of the human personality. But this is a material and purely temporary manifestation. Just as the human embryo is a transient parasitic stage of human life. Human beings from a cosmic perspective are born, live, and die in a relative instant of time. They're not enduring. But mortal personality, through its own choosing, possesses the power of transferring its seat of identity from the passing material intellect system to the higher and miraculous soul system, which in association with the thought adjuster is created as a new vehicle for personality manifestation. Vicki?
I continue?
Yes, please. Okay. It's very important to get all of this, yes.
All right. It is this very power of choice, the universe insignia of free will creaturehood, that constitutes man's greatest opportunity and his supreme cosmic responsibility. Upon the integrity of the human volition depends the eternal destiny of the future finaliter. Upon the sincerity of the mortal free will, the divine adjuster depends for eternal personality. Upon the faithfulness of mortal choice, the Universal Father depends for the realization of a new ascending sun. Upon the steadfastness and wisdom of decision actions, the Supreme Being depends for the actuality of experiential evolution.
Now, this is the paragraph I have underlined.
Yes.
Though the cosmic circles of personality growth must eventually be attained, if, through no fault of your own, the accidents of time and the handicaps of material existence prevent your mastering these levels on your native planet, in your intentions and desires, if your intentions and desires are of survival value, there are issued the decrees of probation extension. You will be afforded additional time in which to prove yourself.
Do y'all see what it's, in my opinion, what it's saying there, where when you make choices, everything on this planet in this life is about choices.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think it was interesting how it was pointing how the choice wasn't even through the mind, but the personality was controlling the mind. I don't know if you read that, but it's...
Okay, now say that again. Say that again, Chris. Where were you?
It was saying, well, I'd have to find the exact quote. It was just sort of putting the responsibility more on the personality than the mind that the personality was using.
What's that? You mean where it's saying mortal identity is a transient time-life condition? It is real only insofar as the personality elects to become a continuing universe phenomenon? Is that what you're, is that what you're pointing out?
I think it was a different line. I would have to find it. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Because everything is subjected to our human, our decisions, and that comes through the mind circuits, right, ladies? Am I correct?
I believe so.
Because the soul is born when we first make an altruistic decision at about age 4 or 5.
Right.
Then, and we become co-creators with the spirit, which we call the adjuster, of what is called the soul, that enduring reality. Okay, and let me finish this, and then you can read, Chris. Then, through our choices, and the unique aspect of us is the personality circuit, which I don't know if any of your intuitive readers ever figured that one out, but I've often said the soul is the new mind, and every choice we make, there's a quote in the papers, and it's in my passport, either impedes or enhances the growth of the soul. Some souls look like this big, plump raisin. Some souls look like, a grape with water. You know, some souls look like a shriveled up raisin. Because of the way people make their choices.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what did you find, please?
Oh, the line that stuck out to me, it says, when it is said that man has identity, it is recognized that he is in possession of a mind circuit which has been placed in subordination to the acts and choosing of the will of the human personality. So it seems like the will is pretty
mind. Wait, now, there's a difference between human personality and personality. So therein lies. So I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems like it's just saying. It seems like it's just an incidental reference to the human personality.
Saying.
I mean, I don't think it's talking about personality in singular. No, but it is talking about every human personality out there. It's in the. I mean, it says clearly that the mind circuit is in subordination to the acts and choosing of the will of the human personality.
Vicki, how do you interpret that sentence?
Could I go to a different sentence that I was I was thinking about your seat of identity that you were originally talking about here. That's kind of what was sticking in my mind was when I've been in certain churches and they really and I think the Arantia book would say this as well, that we need to take on the identity of being a child of God. And, of course, that's, you know, the beginning of entering the kingdom. And so in this sentence here, but mortal personality through its own choosing possesses the power of transferring its seat of identity from the passing material intellect system to the higher Marantia soul system. Which, in association with the thought adjuster, is created as a new vehicle for personality manifestation. And so, you know, when we truly take on this identity as being a child of God, that's when, you know, our soul maybe really starts to grow.
I wonder if a new vehicle would also require a new name, you know, and that would also sort of affirm a seat of identity. I mean, you know,
right.
I don't know. So, I mean, it seems, you know, so, I mean, it seems like it may be like a transfer of even the title of ourselves within our own lifetime is possible, and that it seems like it's what it's describing to me.
Well,
right.
And we have to be careful with that, in my opinion. I know people, and that's fine. If in some religious, spiritual circles, people take on new names, even the Catholic faith, you know, they take on another name.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying we would even be aware of it. I mean, we could be given a name and we don't even know. Or we
won't we have another name in the heavens? Am I right about that?
Yeah, but I mean, it's saying here that we could do this transfer here. I mean, say I did have a transferred seat of identity, and I went to the person that confirmed it. I said, well, my name is such and such. He'd say, well, no, that's not your name. And there would not be much I could do to you know, argue against the spiritual being, whether I thought my name was what it was or not.
Well, I've often said this. Our daughter is, they'll have their third son any moment now. And the other boys are, the little toddlers are Alexander and Samuel. So I've been asking her, she's in Virginia Beach, and I said, Ashley, it's interesting that they even know this is a boy because she has her children at home, and the midwives stay in the living room because she's just really a mountain lady because of the bloodlines. She said, Mom, we don't give the name until the baby is born, and I'm holding and Paul is with me. Because suddenly the name will bubble up. And I find that interesting. I know I struggle with naming, we struggle with our three kids, and I'm sure you have children. And I know Ashley, I have written name after name after name, and I was actually on the phone almost very close to having her and was on the phone with, believe it or not, the chairman of the board of Procter & Gamble. And it was a whole thing we were talking about because I was helping him with some marketing things because of some weird rumors that were flying around about their company. And when I hung up, I had written down the name of, and I said, well, that's odd. So I called him back and I said, sir, did we talk about this name? And he said, no. And it was just totally right. I don't want to get too mystical there, but I find that quite interesting. In some cultures, in some religious circles, your name has a very specific meaning.
Yeah, I know that the Muslims take on new names. Definitely, when you become a Muslim, you have to take on a new name. And a lot of the people in other faiths I deal with, yeah.
Cassandra, what do you think of this?
Of the idea of a new name?
Yeah, what he's saying here is that you might, when you go into another consciousness, have this gentle tug of, is that what you're saying, Chris, that you get?
Well,
this?
I mean, it says when association with a thought adjuster is created as a new vehicle. Why would how could a new vehicle have the same? It could not be this, and if it is the same name, it wouldn't be accurate. I don't know. That's just something
that's
else.
That's fascinating. Okay, that's well. Those of you who have never been in a study group, this is what we do, right, Cassandra and Vicky?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Chris, we're down to 6 minutes, and Chris, this is your study group.
Yeah, y'all guys, we can definitely get together and talk anytime. The point I would say about the Moronsha thing is that, you know, that if you read that the Moronsha temple, not only is Christ supposed to return, but when that person and sit on the chair in the center, if you study about the actual design of the Moronsha temple, it's going to have three seats, one with him in the center and one with the final lighters on the left and one with the planetary sovereign on Melchizedek on the right. So my focus of the Moronsha level is getting that Moronsha temple established.
Oh, you want it here. Oh, okay.
Oh, we need to get the ball rolling. It's not a, you know, I don't know if that's because I'm a...
Wait, huh?
Yeah, well, we...
Do what?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What? I didn't hear what you said.
I kind of think we need light and life before we have the temple.
Well, if we don't have the intention, then it ain't going to go. And, you know, it's up to us. We got to make sure that you take it in your own hands. You may be the only person that's willing or capable mentally of establishing that. And so, and it may not occur until a human decides that's what has to happen.
Wow.
You know, it may be just waiting on somebody to decide it.
And by the way, ladies, Chris is totally understands rocks and gems.
Yeah, and that's another reason I think real clearly about that sort of thing because, that's a real, you got it.
When you become his friend on Facebook, you'll see he's totally into how do you term your avocation, Chris?
Oh, I would just say a very intimate association with the atomic realities of stone.
Right. I love your stones. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, we're down to 4 minutes. Vicki?
Yes.
You wondered how we'd fill up this time, right?
2 hours. Yeah, all right.
And Cassandra, thank you. Please, to both of you, I hope you can join us again on Wednesdays. And I want to once again say that we do have, there's a Saturday show. I've already announced it at the top of the hour. And you know what, Chris? We're going to play a song, a sign-off song that's for you. It's written and sung. It was actually written, I just forgot, Jesus Was a Working Man, Bert Cobb, who's gone to Mansion World, and Lee.
I know
Farmer.
That.
Again, please?
I know that song.
I love that song. And Lee lived here in Texas. So this one is dedicated to you, Chris Michael.
Thanks.
Who has taken on a new name.
Yeah, man.
Vicki, thank you so much. And I want to remind everybody the name of Vicki's book, and it's on Amazon, Transcending the Everyday Temptations of Overeating. Cassandra, you're going to have to come on and talk about it because I'm going to tell you, that cleansing, going through that process saved my life.
Yeah, God bless you, Vicki. I hope you master completely everything, and you shall be successful.
And
thank
your
you.
Book is
yeah,
going to
yeah.
be, we're going to speak over your book right now that it's going to be a bestseller, Vicki. If ever you rent a book, reader would buy a case, and I'm telling you, it's just like handing out, it's incredible. Okay, Chris.
Well, thank you so
much. Jesus was a working man. Thank you, Vicki. Thank you, Cassandra.
Thank
adios,
you.
Guys.
Thank
adios.
You.
God bless. Adios. Chris, you got to listen to this song. Don't hang up.
All right, I can hear it on the computer.
And Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a working man. He had muscles of steel and callous hands. Always had a master plan. Yeah, Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a working man. He had muscles of steel and callous hands. Yeah, Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a rocking man. Jesus was a working man.
That was